IPOs have started. I remember the first crop that went public 3-4 years ago, maybe there were 7 of them at that time. I was looking at the data and 5 out of 7 have actually traded up since the time of listing.
Some of the pre-IPO placement of some of the companies that were going public seemed a bit too broad-based. And then I heard that the founder's view was broad-based.
If you look at the most transformative companies across history, and especially the ones which are now celebrated, you know, trillion-dollar plus market cap companies, all of them have reached that destiny in public markets.
In the age of social media, and probably we see people like Elon Musk using it very effectively, whether it works for him or not.
If you go public at anything less than, call it 4,000-5,000 crore market cap, I think getting attention from the real quality long-term capital becomes harder.
Many IPOs, I will not name, we all know, were benchmarked at high private market valuation, struggled to come into the public market at a valuation that would, you know, you said, leave some money on the table is what we have heard from the buyers. You know, one line I love is, if you trade green, you are evergreen. If you trade red, you are dead.
There are going to be 100 public companies by 2030.
If you have to go public in the next 2 to 3 years, start now.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Zero to Infinity, our podcast. Avi, always fun to do these with you. Today's podcast title is actually Credit to You. It goes from Z to A, the state of digital IPOs in India. And Z is Zomato, A is Aether. Neither of them are companies we are investors in, but still one of the first companies to go public in the current crop, and then obviously the most recent one that has gone public. I guess the key question here for all of us is, you know, IPOs have started. It's very encouraging to see how companies have performed in public markets. I remember the first crop that went public 3-4 years ago, maybe there were 7 of them at that time. I was looking at the data and 5 out of 7 have actually traded up since the time of listing. So clearly this digital asset class is getting created and companies are delivering. And the 2 that haven't are actually both great companies. They were just arguably priced far ahead of fundamentals. Why is this important? I think it's very important because the next set that have gone public, there's a mixed kind of feedback that some of them have received, but they're all kind of just less than a year, maybe some of them, you know, a few months since they've gone public. And I think the future for these companies actually looks quite exciting. In aggregate, of course. And we'll double click on each of these. But before that, your own view.
You know, you and I have done many podcasts with lots of forecasts. And the good news is nobody tracks them as to how the reality played out. So it gives us the license to make more, which we will today. The most exciting part is when you go to founder events now or even to investor events and people are talking about stock prices. It is so exciting to me.
Yeah.
You know, this, I was in the US in the 90s when the first internet bubble was Netscape went public and all of this. And even engineers, when we went out, ESOP cultures was very big, would be talking about stock prices. That's happening now. And it is at the very, very infancy. Now, actually, any CEO worth their salt or founder would say, don't track stock prices. And that's correct. Don't track them on a daily basis, but track them as an aspiration, which is that, you know, we should have a bunch of these public companies. And I think the opportunity in India is we show this to our investors that I would never want to be a VC in the US, frankly. Why? Because even though there is a lot of innovation, it's just going to be very hard. I would feel so much pressure to have to be smart about catching each cycle as a firm, not just personally. And there's a lot of competition. Here in India, we have a unique opportunity where we invest in innovation. Aether is innovation. We have invested in Ola Electric. We have invested in OneCard. We have invested in Scapia. We have invested in so many companies that are innovation-led. Bunch of AI companies like Atomic Work, Grey Labs, which is shooting later today. And we get the opportunity to invest in compounding, which is all our, you know, starting with Five Star, which was a great outcome for us. So many lending businesses we have in our portfolio, InPrime, Seeds, Finable. And then we have B2B, starting with Off Business and so many in the current portfolio. What is exciting is bottoms up, you have a lot of company creation and value creation, both happening across compounding and innovation. Public markets, I would say, historically were used to compounding investments and compounding companies. obviously these ones are a little bit on steroids. The innovations ones also going out in the public markets and getting acceptance is the most exciting. I believe we are on version 4 now, Rajinder. So version 1, Zomato opened the market, credit to them. Version 2, little bit of a debacle. I think you have some perspective on it, which was probably mispricing. Version 3 we saw in the last cycle, not all of which have traded up. So maybe you can add some context there.
Yeah.
And I think version 4 is now coming and has started.
On version 1, it's clear. I think the data is already in. 5 out of 7 have traded up. There was a version 0 even before this, right?
Yeah.
There was Make My Trip, there was Info Edge, India.
I will tell obviously. Deep and Sanjeev, you called them 0. But credit to them. But,
and look
at how they have, I think both are valued more than $10 billion. If
correct.
I'm not wrong.
And those companies have clearly, like over a decade, maybe 2 decades now in one case, clearly they've far exceeded where they went public. Even the 2021 cohort, 5 out of 7 have traded ahead of where they listed. If I look at the current crop, which is another, call it 15, 20 companies that have gone public in the last year and a half, I will venture a guess and make a bold claim that I think comfortably 70-80% of those companies also will be significantly ahead of where they have gone public. Even though today they trade lower than where they went public in many cases. And the rationale is very simple in my mind. I think all of these companies went public in a normal market. None of those IPOs, I think, were priced aggressively. I think the companies need some time to settle and find their feet. Public markets reward profitability. They reward consistency. There is a journey that every company goes through from private to public. At least in a few of these companies' cases, the ones at least that have delivered on profitability, we're already seeing stock prices significantly ahead of where they were at. So,
particularly with Zomato, right? It was at 45 rupees at one point. And I know we will keep saying that because it's very convenient to pick a number and say we would have bought at that price. And today it's 225, went up to 300. But let's summarize the learnings for each version. So V1 to V2 was profitability. Very clear.
Yeah.
Right? V2 to V3 was pricing. The IPOs were mispriced. Right? And V3 to V4 is happening as we speak. It is about predictability. Okay. So this is important. I would almost summarize it as 3 P's. Get profitability was the first P that companies had to get right. Then they had to get their pricing correct. And then now it's predictability. One of the results of that is even us as investors, we need to be cognizant of these 3 P's. And we need to be guiding our companies well. On predictability, I think, by the way, the 4th one is coming, which is going to be ultimately public markets look at capital deployment and return on capital employed. ROCE, I think one of the aspiring public companies founder, which both of us know well, said, ROCE ne rula diya, right? I think we need to be cognizant that as a, and by the way, he told me, you should have thought of this earlier and told me, right? I do think it's our job as well, right? So I think we need to flag that. So Rajinder, given where we operate, and since you and I like to make forecasts, which nobody checks later for the reality. So how many companies are listed today in our innovation universe?
So if you include just the digital companies, I think it would be somewhere in the 2025 range. If you include some of the innovative financial services companies, then I think that number goes to 30-35. And
and we would include companies like Five Star, I guess, in that. And
clear business model innovation, early stage company, venture
and highly tech enabled.
Highly tech enabled
underwriting.
Yeah. Okay.
So now, how do we forecast this?
So I think the number is clear in my head because I did the bottoms up and I did the top down. Just to remind everyone, we had a podcast earlier, and you know, we'll add the show note in the details. We had said, if you look 10, 15 years forward, total tech market cap in India or innovation market cap in India will be somewhere in the range of 2 to 3 trillion. And then you back calculate that, how many companies does that kind of translate to? Obviously, there's a number out there. But if I just take a 5-year view for now, like 2030, we're sitting, you know, 2025. If I just take a 5-year view, I think the current number of 30, 35 companies goes somewhere closer to, on the conservative side, 80, 90. Optimistic 90 to 100. So somewhere in that 80 to 100 range for me. I feel very comfortable underwriting that there will be 80 public companies. That means 50 more. 50 more over 5 years means 10 companies a year. it's not wishful thinking. There's actually detail around which companies in each of our portfolios are expected to go public, yeah, including our own.
You know, and I will do my math differently. I think we'll end up with the same answers. Be in that same thing where we talk about innovation, market cap creation. We talk about innovation penetration, or we call it digital penetration into the GDP, and therefore the market cap being about 5%. Developed markets like China and the US being at anywhere between 25% to 40% to 45%. Right now, if you were to do it versus the Magnificent Seven, it's probably 45-50%, right? What people have to understand and realize and be excited by is that India is fully digitized. We are now on a DPI level, the digital public infra level, the most digitized economy in the world. So is it a far-fetched assumption to say, you know, we get there? Probably not. But let's be conservative. Let's take 20-25%, right? How many IPOs happened in India last year?
Probably 25, 30.
I think it's closer to 50, 60.
Wow.
Last year. And I can see, by the way, this week is 5 because the markets have reopened, right? I think it was 50, 60. We can check the data. But take 20-25% of that, you get your 10-15 per year number.
Right? Yeah.
Let's take my framework for these. You know, Sequoia Capital US is well known. It's a highly respected firm for me also. Is well known for saying that we want a percentage of NASDAQ's market cap. Because historically, tech companies used to list on NASDAQ. And they put a bold number. I don't know if it was 40% or whatever. I think we have been saying this now for 19 years. But now we can actually back it up with conviction and with data playing out. That we want 40 to 50% market share of the best entrepreneurs in the country. And I believe that the best entrepreneurs will ultimately decide if they want to take a company public, and many of them will.
Yeah.
So that's how I reach it, which is, you know, are there going to be over the next year 10, 12 great entrepreneurs, which by the way also involves all the companies that are already there that should be going public, looking at, you know, just the number of deals that are getting done. So if you look at the top tier VCs and the typically in a year, amongst all of us, and you know, top tier, let's call it top 6, 7, let's not name names. How many investments would we be making a year collectively?
Collectively, probably 150.
New investments. 100 to 150.
Yeah.
What's the hit rate for value creation typically? We have this data. Every 6 to 8 companies, sixth or eighth company in that range becomes a unicorn, becomes a high value creating company. There you go. So you have again 10, 15, something like that. So it's somewhere in the 10 to 20 a year range. And therefore it is in 100-ish, my own guess, 100 more companies. Now you also spoke about financial services. I have not fully included financial services. Maybe I have included half of it in this count. But I think there's another half that is not as tapped into by VCs. That will continue to create value. And hopefully some of us will tap into it.
No, I think the breakdown, if I think about, you know, obviously all of us like to analyze data. So I was looking at it. If I look at the sector mix of this 80 to 100 or let's call it 100 companies that we expect to go public by 2030 from across all these VC portfolios, I think financial services will still probably be the largest in terms of sectoral
representation. If you use the broader definition.
Correct.
Yeah.
So fintech and financial services will still be the largest, followed probably by consumer and consumer tech, again, including both tech as well as more D2C. And then, of course, software and then, you know, B2B commerce and deep tech. I think that's really in terms of just the mix of companies. So it's pretty broad-based.
So I have a different point of view on that. It is based on historical data. But the architecture of India's GDP is changing. And therefore, you will see a more deep tech, you will see more manufacturing, and therefore, you will see more B2B also going forward. So that's one. Second, and cross-border plays. On the line of the cross-border plays, I think we have many interesting cross-border software product companies now in our portfolio. Almost a third of our portfolio is US domicile now. I think you're going to see a bunch of those. Now, that we will come to later. Whether those companies will go public in India or the US is TBD. Exports are counted into a GDP. Imports are not. So, I would consider them in this, in these sectors also.
You know, I was doing another interesting cut on the same set. And one more metric is obviously just how much capital did these companies raise to get to a scale where they can go public? And then, of course, they keep compounding in public markets as well, right? So multiple on capital was the other metric.
Yeah.
And the learning for me between V1 to V2 to now V3 is that the multiple on capital has expanded across each of these versions. And the reason is simple. It's markets have deepened.
Yeah.
Obviously, entrepreneurs are also have gotten wiser. The first set had to create the market, so they ended up consuming a lot of capital. But thereafter, I think just people are blessed. There's better digital infrastructure. There's better willingness to pay from consumers, ability to earn margins. There's less chaotic competitive environment, both amongst companies as well as VCs. It's much more thoughtful. So in some ways, it's actually a much more exciting asset class if I look over the next 10 years. And the fact that people have made money with the first set of companies that have gone public makes retail investing into this asset class also quite exciting.
Yeah. And by the way, this multiple of capital, market cap by to multiple of capital is a proxy for return on capital employed, right? And essentially, to the earlier point about V3 to V4 learning in the markets, I think it really needs to become a lingo for all of us. I remember when we invested in Country Delight, Chakri used to say, my ROCE at the unit level is 55-60%. We didn't believe him and we didn't fully understand it. And then we went deeper and it was true. And some of the, at least at the unit level, if you are going to create a large public company that the that is the darling of the markets, you have to get your ROCE right. ROCE is often a trailing indicator. And so founders would say, how do I actually do it? I actually think there are many leading indicators for it, including unit economics. Look at payback periods, look at LTV to CAC, look at, and a lot of which comes from cohorts. It's all a proxy for ROCE. It's all a proxy for ROCE, right? And I do believe that that is a very important driver, therefore, of this market cap to capital raise multiple.
So let's break the next section down, Avi, into things that we know and have learned from the first set of companies. And there are new sets of learnings that we debate internally that I think will be instructive and helpful to founders as they think about planning to go be a public company one day. The known learnings, a few, simple. Valuations obviously correlate to fundamentals in public markets, private markets, sometimes it doesn't. Therefore, you need to be closer to profitability, and that we've discussed. Another one that we picked up and we've spoken about before from public market investors is they also care about getting some upside on day one. So you need to leave a little bit of money on the table in the IPO. I think the key debates that we have with founders, I think, you know, this is one where it would be great to, you know, speak with you about, is should I go public? And the frame we use often is permanent capital versus patient capital. Another one that we discuss with founders is, you know, but what about valuation? Because I may have to take a, you know, hit on valuation if I have to go public.
Yeah.
How should founders think about these two questions?
I personally would struggle to run a public company, but I think if you really are building a company for the long term, institutionalized, so to speak, this is not even a debate. And the reason is, I think, and by the way, I've had discussions with many founders, including our own, whether it's Mr. Pathy of Five Star or Bhavesh of Ola Electric, all of whom have had various journeys in the public markets. They would never change it. It doesn't matter how your stock is doing. And they, and specifically one, and you'll know who that is, would throw the private investors under the bus saying, you guys don't know. It's the public markets that know. And the public markets are very clear. And you know that classic Warren Buffett thing, short-term voting machine, long-term weighing machine, or the other way around, whatever it is. Net-net, they are measuring you in a very objective fashion. You and I will come up with models, and you know we are doing a lot of forecasting here, which is likely to be precisely wrong. But the public markets are very, very rational in the long term and transparent in what they are looking for, which is return on capital employed, predictability, so on and so forth. Even outside the permanent capital base, which is important, but the reality is, if you're profitable, maybe you don't need that base. I mean, when Five Star went public, it was a fully secondary IPO, right? I do believe, even if that is not the case, because some founders may be listening to this and saying, wait a minute, I'm profitable, I don't need that permanent capital. It gives you a degree of flexibility and freedom, and both strategic and financial. That is always important, right? You can use your stock to make acquisitions. You can do many other things, including reward your employees. Second, I think it is a great marketing opportunity for the company. I think of IPOs as where somebody is actually giving you money to market your company because the investors are investing in your company, right? It really builds, of course, with consumer companies. I was discussing last 6-12 months ago, I think even with you, that some of the pre-IPO placements of some of the companies that were going public seemed a bit too broad-based. And then I heard that the founder's view was broad-base it because these are my customers, right? So in consumer, that works. Maybe in enterprise, a little bit less. Ola Electric, it would work. So I do believe it's a great branding marketing opportunity as well. And finally, I think it's just more long-term longevity. I think it gives the founder the ability to step back and say, okay, I'm not managing this investor's exit. I'm not managing this investor's exit. What do I really want 10 years out, right?
Yeah.
So I do think there is no debate in my head. Now, we'll come to, I have actually changed my mind. Earlier, it used to be that you have to be a much larger company. But I don't think that's the case. You and I learned this, you know, meeting all these IPO investors. What is your view on going public?
No, so I think the key question for me is the timing, whether to go public or not. I think that answer is evident and clear because ultimately, founders start companies because they have the ambition to be build something transformational. If you look at the most transformative companies across history, and especially the ones which are now celebrated, you know, $1 trillion plus market cap companies, all of them have reached that destiny in public markets.
You know, they haven't reached that. We have very good point. Sorry to interrupt, but very good point. I didn't think about this. How many brands that we know in the world across sectors are private? Like I think there's a company in the US called Koch Industries, for example. Which is KOCH, right? Which is, I think, multi-billionaires and very large and very influential. Who has heard of them? I can't even pronounce them right.
Yeah.
Right? If they had gone public, I would have known the pronunciation. Yeah. Right? Yeah. So that's actually a very good point.
Yeah. I mean, I think it matters because ultimately, business is a tool for, you know, societal transformation. And you have to be in the public eye.
Yeah.
You can't be permanently in the private, you know, landscape.
But what about the downsides of it? Quarterly results, every mistake is amplified in the newspaper. How should we think about that?
See, the reality is that most companies have figured this out. It's not that the digital companies are unique in having to figure it out.
Yeah.
If anything, they're very well prepared because today, if you open the newspaper, like there's literally so much coverage on private companies that these companies are already in some ways tested for managing, you know, the media, etc., and how that impacts their own narrative and future. So I think companies are prepared on that dimension. I think the key question was really more the three P's that you mentioned, which is profitability, predictability,
Pricing.
No,
but interesting point. You are saying in the age, this is not something I thought about. In the age of social media, and probably we see people like Elon Musk using it very effectively, whether it works for him or not. In the age of social media, you do have more control over your own narrative and you are not handing your destiny to somebody else. If somebody is potentially, something is going wrong, be out there.
Yeah.
Right? That actually is a very interesting point because I have more, my main worry would have been, you know, how should people think about controlling your own narrative, you know, very publicly being scrutinized all the time.
Yeah. So if you think of like 5-10 years ago, there was this Nestle Maggie, you know, episode that happened, right? Which was very well managed and handled. And, you know, there were recalls and all of that. They were all done in the public eye. They were a public company. If I just think that particular incident and how it was handled in that crisis, the reality is all our founders are living some version of that almost on a yearly basis, if not in some cases, you know, more frequently, because there's always some issue around customer complaints or competitors sometimes saying things or investors saying things or employees saying things. So I think companies understand how to manage this. It's less of a concern in my mind.
Okay. So we are saying go public when?
I think the size of the IPO is what dictates when you go public. If you go public at anything less than, call it 4,000-5,000 crore market cap, I think getting attention from the real quality long-term capital becomes harder. Because then if you're, you know, let's say a 1,000 crore market cap company at the time of going public, most of that IPO would get filled by retail and maybe a few smaller kind of outfits, right? It's not really patient long-term capital. But if you're 4,000-5,000 crore, then you get domestic you know, mutual funds, some of them are very large
today.
Isn't it
more driven by float? But just coming back before we go there, Rajendra, the you and I think would have been on record on some podcast saying $3 to $5 billion market cap before you go public. Now you are saying 4,000-5,000 crores, which is 600-700 million. What's changed?
So in my mind, two things have changed. One, I think there is enormous early mover advantage in going public. And I think the first 100 companies that go public in India from this innovation category will have an advantage in shaping views on that space and in that sector. So I think it makes more sense to go sooner, assuming, of course, you hit those three P's.
So we have done a U-turn on this.
Yes, one. Two, I think this asset class on the... So that's the founder view of this, which is get out there and, you know, own the narrative and own the space and own the category. I think on the investor side, it is they want access to this asset class early. They don't want our companies to be coming into market once these assets are fully mature at $4-5 billion market cap. And then, you know, maybe the growth journey ahead of that will, you know, be less accelerated, let's just say. If you go earlier, then they think there's more upside. And I think that's rational. So they actually also want companies to go public sooner, assuming that those three P's get met. So if I summarize, I think there will be a lot more, call it anywhere between $600 million to $1 billion kind of IPOs in India, which is very different as we've discussed versus the US. Because in the US, if you're not a $4-5 billion market cap company, you just don't get any attention.
But it didn't used to be like that, right? So let's pick up that thread. In the US, 95 to 2008 to 2010, you needed to be a $1 billion market cap, give or take, and companies would go public. What happened was so many went public that today, unless you are 3 to 5 billion or higher, you don't get attention, which is why that has put the Vista Equity Partners of the world into business. Because if you are a 50, 60 million dollar ARR SaaS company, as an example, software company, they will aggregate a few of them, $300 to $500 million of high quality revenue growing, you can go public. That 95 to 2000 of the US started in 2021 in India. Yeah. That's what is important to remember. So this is a good 15-year run that is coming, in my view, maybe 20-year run. And we did change our mind. For me, one of the things that we didn't cover, or why for me the mind changed, is think buyer backwards. We went and met the buyers. We met CIOs, we met mutual fund managers, we met portfolio managers. And they all said, we want to be in this asset class. This is the future. The market receptivity has changed. And when market receptivity has changed, it is important to then think, you know, how should one change one's strategy? There is one caveat. The caveat is, if this is the case, we and the founders need to start thinking very differently about the private market rounds. Many IPOs, I will not name, we all know, were benchmarked at high private market valuations, struggled to come into the public market at a valuation that would, you know, you said, leave some money on the table, is what we have heard from the buyers. You know, one line I love is, if you trade green, you are evergreen. If you trade red, you are dead, right? Essentially, it's saying, where does your stock open?
Yeah.
And if the stock, and why? Because when people are making money, they feel happy. And they will, and that sentiment builds on itself. Two, three points. Yes, go public earlier, whenever you have the other three P's in place. That's very important. I would say, including a good path to ROSI. So that's the when. Two, one of the other things we didn't discuss is, if you wait too long and your best days are behind you, your best growth is behind you, then you're not going to get great multiples in the public markets. You won't have that opportunity to beat results. What happens in the US? I don't know what happened with Nvidia's results last night. I think they were supposed to come. It's about beating results, and it's all about that sex appeal that comes, right? In the US, again, the narrative changed to stay private longer, because Facebook, Google, so on and so forth, left a lot of money on the table when they went public. May well be the case, not the case in India. That was in the 95 to 2010 window. We are in that window. Go public when you can, when all these four things align. Therefore, don't raise a private round at too high a price. I have started advising founders who are thinking public that, guys, do it in a way such that when you go public 12 to 18 months from now, your private investors are 20-30% in the money, while you are pricing it at a level where the public investors are going to be 20-30% in the money when it trades. So I do think it's a big deal. I believe that there is a permanent change in exit options in India. It's something we tell our investors, it's something we believe. Going back to the $1 billion IPOs, call it 5,000 crores to 20, 30, 40,000 crores, whatever is that. The long tail is the bread and butter of this ecosystem, not just for us VCs. It's what drives that DPI, you know, the distributed to paid in capital. It what drive like a company like Ixigo going public, doing well in the public markets. It's a great thing, right?
Yeah.
So I do believe it's a permanent change. And I do think founders should therefore start thinking differently on when to tap public markets. We are doing a showcase in a couple of weeks for some of our companies. Farmart is there, Captain Fresh, maybe Mosaic, OneCard, MSwipe. What am I missing? Moengage is coming. Razorpay is coming. These public market investors are eager to meet companies that can come public 12 to 18 months before they actually go public, right? So I do think the founders should come spend time in Mumbai. It's very convenient for you and me. And meet these investors to learn what they are looking for and therefore build backwards a little.
So whether to go public, answer is clear, at least in my mind. Hopefully the viewers feel the same way. When to go public, we've also discussed. Where to go public? I think this is a debate again. Some founders obviously are building for India, so the answer is clear. But there are also founders who are building for global markets and they sometimes think through that choice as well, which is, should I do it India? Should I do it US? I have a view.
Why don't you start with your view? Then I'll probably add a couple of things.
So my net learning, if you look at the China story and how it played out.
Yeah.
I think a lot of Chinese companies listed in China, then, you know, also listed overseas and then flipped back to China. And honestly, it was complicated and there's a lot of China context. But this asset class is getting created in India. And India as a market is such a large market today that every FII, every domestic mutual fund today is focused on this asset class and has teams that are focused on this asset class in India. I just don't see a clear reason why you should list anywhere else.
Yeah.
You want your currency here.
Yeah.
It makes it a lot easier for employees as well. Imagine having, you know.
What about the SaaS companies where their customers are overseas?
So I think the customers being overseas for me is less of a question. I think it's more if one had to explore, let's say, inorganic options.
Yeah.
You know, having global currency does help. That is potentially one thing which, you know, makes it a little more complicated. But I think the government and other, you know, bodies will certainly work some version of a solution around this as well.
So I didn't think of the M&A piece, which is a good point, should be factored in. My instinct was, India is clear. Go public where more than half of your revenue comes from that market. So all consumer companies, B2B companies, if more than half their revenue is coming from India's GDP and digitization and innovation, it's a no-brainer. I'm a little bit torn on these enterprise AI or SaaS companies if their majority of revenue is coming from the US markets. I would probably still do what you're saying. And you know companies like Moengage have shifted their domicile back to India or in the process of Razorpay has in order to go public here. I don't know how well understood they will be in the Indian public markets, but it is what it is. I've heard some investors speak of them in the same breath as a Mastek and IT services companies. And these are products companies. So maybe the multiple may be a little bit lower because they don't understand them well. But at the same time, these are very high revenue retention and predictability businesses. So I'm hoping it will kind of net off. And then the final point is, at least the thoughtful, good investors in any market like to do customer-level DD. And that's easier if you're in that market. Your customers, those logos are well-known. So I am in the middle on this one.
At least on the pricing part, Avi, I think the data so far suggests for the first 20, 30 companies that have gone public, they all trade at a premium to their global peer.
Yeah.
And the reason they do is just growth.
Yeah.
There's higher terminal value growth. There's more interesting economics in the India market. So I'm optimistic. I think the companies that go public here will see an upside even on valuation. They may not see it on day one, but they will over a period of time.
One other point there though, and just in terms of data, and I think you first showed me this data. It was a surprise. And now I just read on basically the importance of domestic investors versus foreign investors in India. even for Indian IPOs. 2021, I think, was it mid-2021 where the line crossed and overall foreign flows were more than Indian Correct. Flows?
SIP, domestic flows went up.
Yeah, sorry. Domestic flows went higher than foreign flows. Net-net market has been driven by domestic flows, which come from SIPs as well as all these institutional mutual fund. And even in a bad month, since September, some correction started. Sometimes the net SIP addition has been negative. Yet, you had $3 billion of net inflows in April. What I read, I think it was last week, that the ownership, at the ownership level of the entire market cap or the free float of the market cap, for the first time, domestic holdings has gone more than yes, foreign holdings.
That is correct.
So, one has to look at two different things. One is flows, but the existing base was still more foreign. And now the existing base has moved to domestic. These are tectonic shifts. Tectonic shifts. I saw this happen in the US with the 401k plans. And once this kind of stuff happens, the genie doesn't in a good way come out back into the bottle, right? So, I do think that is another thing to keep in mind. Now, the correction has in some ways been underway for 6 months, 8 months, 12 months, whatever it is. And it's a very healthy thing. But this is a permanent trend.
Yeah.
And then it aligns very quickly with saying, okay, then market to this trend.
Yeah. And not only that, I think there's that data point, which is flows and capital. There's also the point that Indian markets are not cheap. So, asset manager at any of these mutual funds, they're hungry for new IPOs because yeah. they want to deploy capital into new ideas
yeah.
versus chasing existing ideas at higher prices.
Yeah.
So, I think there's enough
and adequate capital. But is the risk appetite for seeing errors, business model iterations, all of that, is that or using the word sophisticated, but in the right context, but is the sophistication level of DIIs similar to FIIs and therefore what they are willing to overlook and forgive if you list here versus the US?
For this asset class, probably still building and still getting there.
Yeah.
But the first few companies, if I look at taking risky bets, I think there are enough examples out there.
But obviously, they went through Zomato, an up and down, no?
Correct. But if you yeah. take a 6 to 12 month view on this asset class, it would never make sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you take yeah. a 3-year view, it was the right call.
Yeah.
And so if companies can take risky bets, yeah. you know, Zomato is an example of that, but there are also other examples.
Yeah.
Cartrade, yeah. you know, lesser known stock, they acquired OLX, yeah. that's done well for them. So there have been risky bets which have paid off. And I think investors obviously take time to understand, but eventually I think they'll get fully calibrated.
So I'll tell you what I heard from these investors. They are okay with that, but then you better tell them upfront. So, yeah. Their view is, and they obviously blame people like us, their view is that companies are coming to the public markets with their private market plans and then they completely miss all those plans. Public markets care about predictability, right? They may sign up for it, but not if it is a negative surprise at the end of the quarter, right? Yeah. So, I do think, so when people say, oh, US may be more forgiving and they're used to all of this, the US is more forgiving if you tell them upfront, these are the losses I'm going to make.
Yeah.
The US is also not forgiving. All public market investors globally are the same. And that's a good thing. Yeah. It's a feature, not a bug. I think there also, the difference is the companies guide better. And I think that's something that which is where the predictability
comes. I think last topic that I wanted to cover, we've covered now also the where. I think the last one is the how.
Yeah.
And this is a discussion again that we often have with founders, which is, okay, this all makes sense. Now, I think I'm aligned. Can I hit the market in 12 months?
Yeah.
And is it as simple as let's get the right bankers involved? Let's, you know, engage, you know, people, or at least in my mind, it's, you know, it's a much longer process because
yeah.
you need to have a team, a CFO,
yeah, yeah,
you know,
yeah,
I would love yeah. to hear how you think about it.
No, so tell me, let's say that a company's scale, whatever they're, and this is not a pitch they are making to us or to the bankers, founders' true first principles view of their business is such that they want to go public of, what is today, March, today is May 25. Let's say 3 years out. They want to go public priced off their March 2028 numbers. Tell me, Rajinder, when should they start the work and why?
If you want to get priced off FY28, I think you should be starting work yesterday.
Why?
So, let's walk through the steps.
Yeah.
I think the first thing is most companies still operate with more of a startup DNA.
Yeah.
And that includes the finance function within yeah. these companies.
Yeah.
That is just not possible as a public company.
But that's already too late. So, my view is that finance function should have, the CFO should have been there today.
Correct.
But let's we will overlook that issue, but that's a serious issue. A company you are saying going public 3 years from now should have had a CFO in place for maybe 6 to 12 months so they understand the company already. So that makes it 4 years, but yeah. Go ahead.
No, so I think I won't say 4 years. I'll still say it today. We don't want to scare people. You want a CFO in place.
Yeah.
You want to have your key business units headed yeah. by people who have enough vintage and experience.
Leading to predictability.
While at the same time maintaining your startup DNA. So there is a little bit of a cultural transformation that's also happening in parallel.
Please read Org 3.0, yeah. which is one of our podcasts. This is version... Or this is probably the Infinity Org, but it takes a few iterations.
Then, of course, there is the entire process around regulatory in India.
So, what is the process? So, let's start. You are saying, start today. What do I do?
You
have a board meeting.
Align with your board.
And I am clear that my plan, by the way, is a starting point till FY28 is a high confidence plan. 90-95% confidence for in reality, not a inflated.
So, I think the plans that typically startup founders prepare are very different from what public market investors
we spoke about
to review.
Yeah.
Just to be clear, it's not as detailed,
yeah.
but it needs to be much more certain.
Correct. Very good.
So
very
the
good
drivers, trade-off. The drivers of the business need to be much clearer.
Yeah.
Today, if we discuss in our portfolio companies, how are we going to hit this plan? There's literally 10 ideas.
Yeah. It should be three vectors
at most, right? How we actually get there. Yeah. The board will then invite bankers to come.
So, we had a board meeting. We got approval from the board to explore. Now, what do?
We need to get the right bankers excited about our company.
Yeah.
Which means they're going to spend time, understand our business. They'll take a few months to get up to speed.
Maybe in 2-3 months, some bankers come and pitch.
And then
so, in 4 months, maybe we have finalized a banker.
4 or 5 months, you finalize the banker. Then they start working on the DRHP process.
Which is how long to draft?
Quarter. Assume it takes
maybe even longer, 3 to 4 months.
Assume it takes you a quarter. You file your DRHP.
Yeah.
And then it takes, call it 4 or 5 months to approve.
Let's call it 6 years. So, we are now about 1.5 years into this.
Correct.
In the worst case, maybe about 1 year in the best.
And once your DRHP is approved, you have 12 months to go public.
Yeah.
Assuming, and this is the big if, market conditions are conducive.
So now
at that
I'm
point.
Sitting in July to August, September 2026. What am I getting priced at? Off.
So you wanted to get priced off FY28. Honestly, you should getting priced off FY28.
In a good bull market, yes. In a bad market, I would get priced off September 27. That's what people need to understand. That for a March 28, pricing IPO. We should have had a CFO in place. The board aligned. Ideally, some pre-baking done with bankers by now. Right?
Yeah.
So, now, can you do it shorter time? Yeah, probably year and a half. Remember, you are increasing the risk of how well your IPO will do. Because a lot of these things are proper steps that should be followed. So, I think the big takeaway I want people to have is you just alluded to that point, whether markets will be ready. Markets will not be ready to take you public when you want to go public. You have to be ready when the market is ready to take you public. It's a very, very important difference. So be fully ready. Have all of that lined up. You decide. You get your DRHP approval and the market blows up. Too bad. Wait it out. I know the journey may have been up and down, but I'm still very happy that a company like MobiKwik is public because they filed, I think, twice before.
Correct.
And both times couldn't go public and now they went public. That's great. And who cares what the market cap is? They went public. It's a successful IPO.
Yeah.
Right? So, if you're ready, if you have all your ducks lined up, you have to be almost on deck. Market corrections typically last 6 to 12 months. The IPOs that open markets, the IPOs, the companies that go public early, will get more attention. When they get more attention, when a public market manager spends time understanding your company, even if it goes down, they most likely won't sell it unless the thesis has changed. If you come in the middle of a frenzy of IPOs and there is very thin stack work that happens, either they won't invest in the IPO and they'll wait post-IPO, or it'll be very trigger-happy situation. Because the depth of work has not happened. And I think that's very critical. I would urge all our people listening and the founders as they think about this to factor this in mind. And there is, as long as all the other things we spoke about in terms of the P's are ready, just get going.
Yeah.
Don't wait. The mistake I see being made the most is that people are just, haan, 12 mahine mein karunga, 6 mahine mein start karunga. If your company is getting ready, realize that it is, if you have to go public in the next 2 to 3 years, start now.
Yeah. I think the one line for me is the line that you shared, which is market doesn't get ready when you are ready. You have to be ready. And then when the market is ready, you go public.
Correct.
I think the other two things that we didn't cover were, you need a independent board, independent directors on the board. You need, you know, well-functioning committees that are required for, you know, a public company.
Yeah. And so this is important. This is a good point, Rajinder, and you and I haven't discussed this. I think the finance thing is very, very critical early. I think board you could start today, right? Finance, the person has to come in and the systems and know your company.
Correct.
But yes, most of us investors have to actually step off the boats while the company is going public. And a lot of that are also then there is the technical thing of converting to a public company.
I think the other thing is auditors. I think we have also observed that auditors, especially as companies prepare towards becoming public companies, the level of scrutiny just keeps going up.
Yeah.
And so, again, that is something you want to solve earlier
yeah.
versus solving later, closer
yeah.
to your IPO.
Yeah, yeah.
So, no, and planning upfront makes a big difference.
Yeah. Yeah. So, what's the bottom line?
Bottom line is there are going to be 100 public companies by 2030 that are innovative.
Please record this. This is, he said exactly 100.
100. 100 that will go public.
Over some period of time.
By 2030, I'm clear that come out from the VC ecosystem. And I'm relatively clear of the breakdown by companies and sectors as well.
Yeah.
I think if you want to go public at some point, and I think the most transformative companies do build in the public eye, then going sooner versus later is only to your advantage. The three P's, like you mentioned, profitability, predictability, and pricing are all key variables to keep in mind. And then finally, the preparation is not trivial. It's not about just getting a few external advisors appointed and going public. There's a lot of work that companies need to do to be able to build in the public eye. So, I think the time to start preparing
from is your mouth to God's ears, inshallah, hopefully what you are saying, and I believe it, you will have a 5 to 6x more companies in our innovation universe that would be trading in the public markets and give us great cocktail conversations even going forward.
Thanks for doing this, Avi.
Cheers, Rajinder. Thank you.
If you like this episode of Zero to Infinity, there are so many more that you must check out. If you like Indian startup content, hearing about founder journeys, or knowing more about emerging sectors that we're investing in, Zero to Infinity is the channel that you need to subscribe to.